Welcome to Teachers in the Tiny Chairs. Teachers in the Tiny Chairs is a podcast about all things early childhood teaching. Launched in 2020, Teachers in the Tiny Chairs began as a resource for teachers beginning the 2020-21 school year in the midst of the COVID-19 pandemic and all the uncertainty that brought for early childhood classrooms. I'm Dr. Christine Lippard, and each episode I interview researchers, classroom teachers, and other early childhood practitioners on a specific early childhood education topic, intended to provide research background, practical ideas, and cheering on from a distance. Teachers in the Tiny Chairs is the long-distance mentoring your teacher prep faculty wish they could provide. In this episode, I interview Dr. Diane Horm and toddler teachers Taylor and Heather about working in toddler classrooms. What is it about the toddler period that makes it unique? Why are they so excited about toddlers? And what do toddlers need in the classroom setting? We talk a little bit about how the toddlers are handling COVID-19. Spoiler alert, toddlers are better at masks than adults. First up, Dr. Diane Horm.
So hi, I'm Diane Horm, and I work at the University of Oklahoma, and my current position, I have a really long title. I'm the George Kaiser Family Foundation Endowed Chair of Early Childhood Education and the director of the Early Childhood Education Institute. So the George Kaiser Family Foundation funded my position at the University of Oklahoma because Mr. Kaiser, the head of the foundation, has provided money to early childhood programs in the greater Tulsa area, specifically Tulsa Educare and Community Action Project of Tulsa, which is a large Head Start program. He's provided funding for them to help enhance their quality. And one thing he was interested in was having bachelor degree teachers in all the classrooms, even classrooms for infants and toddlers. So there was no place for people to get a bachelor's degree in Northeast Oklahoma once they got their CDA and AA from the community college. He wanted us to build on that program and focus on infants and toddlers as part of our bachelor's program. And our bachelor's program has as much coverage of infant toddler courses as preschool and early pre-KK and early primary. And then the research group was also Mr. Kaiser's inspiration. He was interested in a research team to work with the Tulsa Educare and Community Action Project of Tulsa to help them examine their practices and to collect information that they could use for continuous program improvement.
What interests you about infants and toddlers?
Well, I would say I'm interested in the whole early childhood span and of the birth through age 8, which is typically how early childhood is defined. I'm really interested in birth through 5. And of that, I'm really interested in birth through 3. So I think my interest is really based on the emerging and growing body of research that shows that what happens in those first 3 years is foundational to everything else that happens after that. So I think it's such a formative time of life that what we do really matters. And I think that from a research perspective, I'm interested in it to learn more of what is good practice so that we can best support infants and toddlers in group programs.
Why is it important for us to care about toddler care? And I ask this imagining that relative who will show up at the holiday Zoom and say, well, it's just babysitting. I mean, you just feed them and change them. What do you say to that? Or how do you help people understand why is it important to care about infants and toddlers and their childcare?
Through our scientific research, we're finding more and more evidence that everything children experience in those first 3 years has both short and long-term impacts. And I think that as we do more and more research, we're finding more and more broad-reaching impacts over the whole lifespan. I know that my research group has been really taken by the analysis of the Abecedarian Project, which, as you know, that project was started in the 70s at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. and they randomly assigned infants to a high quality early childhood program or not, and they followed those children over the course of their life. They found advantages for children generally in those cognitive and academic measures. But the compelling part of that study is they found a lot of advantages that just make you more successful at life. So the children who attended the high quality early childhood program over their similar peers who didn't get that, they graduated high school at higher rates, attended college at higher rates, graduated from college at higher rates, stayed out of jail at higher rates, so had more successful adult lives. And what I'm getting to is a compelling new finding that 40-year-old males who attended the high-quality early childhood program in Abecedarian were found to have better cardiac health as 40-year-olds than the children that were randomly assigned to the control group. So that's a compelling finding. But to answer your question, like why is working with infants and toddlers important, to have, when you start talking to people about those types of research findings, you can usually convince your audience pretty quickly.
So knowing these things about the importance of early experience and knowing that children who are infants and toddlers and all young children right now are sort of experiencing these layers of a global pandemic and how that impacts their routine and their family members, of social justice and racial reckoning in our country, and of a tumultuous election, and of sort of the emotional energy of the adults around them as these things unfold. What are your concerns? How are you seeing COVID and those things impact toddler classrooms? And then, you know, how do teachers buffer that?
So I must admit, I'm getting into the realm of like anecdotal information, not kind of the research base that I talked about earlier in our
time. And very comfortable with that because as we've said all along in the podcast, we're really talking with people who know the research and know best practice, you know, pre-March of 2020. And then we're all trying to figure out how that applies right now because we just don't have the information yet. So go ahead. We'll take speculation in firsthand.
So we are actually conducting a study that is called the SEED study that started with 3-year-olds and have been following them longitudinally. And the children are now in second grade. And when COVID struck last spring, we should have been collecting their first grade post-assessments, but we didn't get to do that. But what we did instead is we did a COVID survey. So I can talk a little bit about those findings, and then I'll switch to younger children. So what we found, as I think other research studies are finding, is that families are reporting a lot of stress, as your question kind of inferred that there would be a lot of stress. Our study is taking place with Tulsa Public Schools, and Tulsa Public Schools is a large urban school district where a lot of the families are low income. And what we were finding were higher rates of food insecurity, people losing jobs. Life that was stressful became more stressful with COVID. And also then parents also, their children were home and learning from home, and the experience of trying to help the child with schoolwork. Many of the families didn't have the computers or technology to even log on to the schoolwork. Now, the Tulsa Public Schools provided that. And I just want to always give a shout out to Tulsa Public Schools because they provided technology as well as food drop-offs for families and children. So schools became a lifeline, was one thing that we learned. But we did learn that families were experiencing a lot of stress and teachers were experiencing a lot of stress. Now, as I said, those were with like children who were transitioning from first grade to second grade. But through our longstanding research partnerships with Tulsa Educare and CAP Tulsa, and again, both of those programs are programs that are targeted to serve low-income families. Through just talking with them, we know that the families they serve are low-income, so they often have issues related to food insecurity and income coming into the house. But COVID has certainly stressed those families more, just like the same findings that I talked about with the slightly older children. And we know that many programs closed, Head Start programs closed, and Tulsa Educare closed for a while. So again, children were home with families, and families were trying to balance even more if they were, if some of the families were considered essential employees and had to work. And now with the Head Start program or Educare program not operating, the families had the additional stress of, you know, dealing with childcare and dealing with their child's learning. So in talking to my colleagues who actually run those programs, I think that they've all been very mindful of trying to just keep contact with the families. To call, to email, to text, to have to keep the ongoing contact going, and then to check in with families about their needs. So I know that the teachers certainly weren't prepared to offer any type of program to young children before the pandemic. And when I think about the youngest children, you know, we focus so much on the importance of high quality teacher-child interaction and those sensitive, responsive, contingent interactions between an adult caregiver and a child. And those just can't really happen during this time, because for the age group that we're talking about, the youngest children, most of the programs are reaching out to the adults in the child's home. And then the adult is, you know, carrying out whatever programming there would be with the young child. So it's a challenging time. And I think that, you know, I think that center-based programs are learning a lot from people who have been providing home-based programs.
It totally makes sense. And I spoke with our lab teachers last night, whose interview will come after this. And that's what they were talking about. They're back open now and they have their kids in their classroom physically. But they were talking about March through May, you know, they were doing Zoom time, but not that they weren't providing things for the children, but really being available to the parents and to be somebody that had an established relationship and knew their child. So the parents could sort of get that input, you know, and have somebody else's advice or to bounce ideas off of, or just sort of the emotional support was really helpful. So I do think that we're having to rethink that and kind of come reckoning with that idea that our role as early childhood educators includes supporting the family relationships or the parents' relationships with children, which I'm not sure is something we've attended to as much as we should have. And so having said that, I'll ask you, are there any other positives you're seeing coming out of this time, you know, sort of this big shakeup of how we do things?
Well, I would say that certainly COVID has focused our country on the importance of educators broadly, I would say. And from my read of the situation, I would say that the K-12 staff have been recognized for the important role that they perform. And I think that always families understood that their child went to school to learn. But I think that now that they're seeing more of the mechanics of that and the reality of that, they maybe respect it a bit more and kind of understand how difficult it can be. Also, I think the recognition that school is a form of childcare. And I think that that support for families is more and more recognized. Now, for the infant toddler teachers and the teachers of younger children, I do think that our society has, through COVID, has recognized the importance of their roles too, because if the programs remained open, the parents were relying on them for childcare so that they could work if they were essential workers. But I do think it has helped cast the infant toddler provider as a more essential type of worker in our country. Now, I think it remains to be seen if that will be a long-lasting recognition of the respect that and the support that infant toddler teachers provide to families. And I think that COVID has helped us have that be more widespread in terms of the recognition of the importance of the role. Now, I do think it remains to be seen when things get more back to normal, if we can continue to build on that. I have a colleague at the University of Oklahoma at Tulsa, Kyung Ah Kwan, who's been doing a study of teacher well-being. We have a very perfect situation in Tulsa in some of our group care situations for young children, including infants and toddlers, specifically the Tulsa Educare and the CAP Tulsa that I talked about. Through our funder, the George Kaiser Family Foundation and other sources of funding, they're able to pay their infant toddler teachers on par with preschool teachers and that whole group on par with public school teachers. So that's a very unusual situation across mm-hmm. the U.S. where we know that generally teachers in the birth to five realm make less than comparably trained teachers who work in the K-12 system. But here, even infant toddler teachers get paid a comparable salary. And while salary was important in her study of teacher well-being, what the infant toddler teachers really talked about was they want respect for their job and they want recognition of their job. So I'm hoping COVID is a platform. I think it's a challenge to our field to think about how we can use this as a kind of turning point to change the conversation.
So talking about these teachers who are essential. I mean, we've talked about all of COVID essential workers, and I think we're seeing now more than ever that they're essential, but they're facing the challenges of, you know, cleaning COVID protocols at work or unpredictability and what their day is going to look like and managing the pandemic and other pieces themselves. So some of your work focuses pre-COVID on the needs of teachers. Tell us about that and what does that make you think they need right now?
So I mentioned the work of led by my colleague, Dr. Kyung-A Kwan here in Tulsa. And I wanted to just talk a little bit about some of her work and what we're finding and then kind of try to project to COVID times. But pre-COVID, she started work with a big interdisciplinary team to focus on teacher well-being. And to make an analogy, we talk about the whole child. She started to really remind us that we need to talk about the whole teacher. So, you know, the teacher has a professional life, and that's what a lot of the research has looked at, like job stress and those types of issues. But she really has been a leader in reminding us that we have to think about the whole child. And there's not only the professional well-being of teachers, where we talk about, you know, the work climate and the work supports for teachers, but she also has talked about teachers like physical well-being and psychological well-being. And I think that our field has started to look at the psychological well-being of teachers, recognizing that teachers arrive at their classrooms with a whole history, their own social-emotional history. And so in Oklahoma, we've talked a lot about ACEs, adverse childhood events, and how that gets into your biology, to reference some things we were talking about earlier, how that gets into your biology and changes your biology and makes you more prone for stress reaction, those types of things. She also talks about the physical well-being of teachers. And I think that's an area that we've really ignored in the past literature in our field. And she has a physical therapist on her team. And so she did a project here in Tulsa that involved, I think it was around 150 teachers. And they went out to classrooms where she administered some surveys that were more typical of our field, asking about work stress, job stress, you know, the teacher's own background and socio-emotional well-being. But they also did just a few very brief health assessments. They did a step test to look at people's cardiovascular fitness. And for infant toddler teachers, she found that 60% of the teachers were below average in their cardiorespiratory fitness. And 50% of them reported getting no exercise on a regular basis. We talked about ACEs. She found that 25% of the infant toddler teachers reported having four or more ACEs, which is a rate that would put you at risk for mental health conditions. And she, in fact, found about 20% reported depression. Back to the kind of more physical health indicators, she found that 62% reported musculoskeletal pain. And if you think about an infant toddler teacher in terms of the physical demands of their work, that probably makes a lot of sense. She also found that they have very high rates of urinary tract infections, which again, if you think about what infant toddler teachers do in terms of often, then she also found that a lot of them, 36%, I think she that had no designated breaks. So yes, of course they're going to have urinary tract infections. So there's just a lot of health and physical demands of the job that often go kind of unnoticed and unrecognized. So she has really been great in helping us and our program partners focus on why we need to schedule breaks for teachers and why we need to probably have an adult-sized chair in addition to the child-sized chair so that they can have something that's ergonomically correct for them. And our physical therapy partner, Dr. Ken Randall, has really helped us think about, you know, for all of us that work at desks, we know that there are like ergonomic ways to adjust your chair and to adjust your positioning to reduce body strain. And he, just watching infant toddler teachers in classrooms, said there's a lot we can teach people about how to lift and how to move that reduces those kind of pains. But I bet none of us have ever thought about that type of professional development. So it's, I think their work is really helping us adopt that whole teacher philosophy. And I think that should move us along on thinking about broadening the types of professional development we offer to people to help them do their jobs in a more healthy way.
So my sister and I keep telling my mom that the inhibiting factor for making whatever positive life change is not knowledge, right? It's capacity, it's energy, it's whatever. It's not knowledge. And so thinking about, especially teachers that have been in the field or have experience who, you know, a lot of times I don't think it's for lack of knowledge of knowing best practices or knowing what's good for children or wanting it. I don't think it's a attitude issue. I think it is a capacity issue. And so even thinking about that, I know I should get down on the floor with the kids, but it hurts when I get up and down. And the other thing I was going to say about the cardiovascular health, you know, it doesn't surprise me at all because it's a job that's exhausting at the end of the day without doing any of the cardiovascular work as a part of it, you know, built into the job. So that's an exciting area to think down. And like you said, the whole teacher approach, and it makes sense, right? When children are struggling with some sort of, for lack of a better word, performance, academics or behavior or whatever, we try to look at, well, what is the root and how do we address it? And so to think about that for teachers too, if we can address your physical health or your depression or, you know, your anxiety or some of these other things, then that changes your practice because it frees you up and empowers you to practice what you know to be best. Well, is there anything else that you think we should know about infants and toddlers or infants and toddlers in group care?
Well, I was just thinking about your audience, and I was thinking some of these people might be interested in graduate study. And the hat I wear the most now is as a researcher. And thinking about toddlers, if we look to the literature, you know, I said early in the interview, there's this growing body of literature about how formative the infant toddler time period is to all later development. That said, I would say also that toddlers are probably the age group where we have the least dense or thick research base. So if your students and colleagues are thinking about graduate study, I would plant the seed that there are many unanswered research questions with infants and toddlers, particularly toddlers. So if you're interested in graduate study, I would say, you know, stick with the toddler age group.
It was great to hear Dr. Horm's insight, and the research she shares is intriguing, especially thinking about the whole teacher. Speaking of which, let's hear from two toddler teachers. Here's Heather and Taylor.
My name is Taylor Bodholt, and I am a teacher for infants, toddlers, and twos at the Iowa State University Child Development Lab School.
And I'm Heather Bruno, and I'm also a teacher at the lab school at Iowa State, of same group, infants, toddlers, and twos. Currently, the difference between Taylor and I is I am in the infant room, so I have infants and young twos, and she's in the classroom with twos and threes.
I think my favorite part about working with toddlers is those aha, those light bulb moments for a skill that you've worked so long and hard on, and they feel that sense of proudness when they've accomplished something and you know that you had a hand in that. And it's something that they feel empowered to continue to do in the future. And just that being able to go through those experiences with them is just really neat.
What I love the most is at the earliest stages, how concrete that development is and, you know, how visible it is to see so much of that development happen. You know, it takes time, but at the same time, there's moments where it just goes by so quickly too. So it's just fun to see how quickly they grow and learn.
Well, when you think about sort of outside of the COVID context, just toddlers in general. What do they need? What makes for a good toddler classroom?
So I can start with this one. Definitely routine. The more routine you have and consistency and predictability for toddlers, to me, is what makes a great classroom and what they need.
To add off of that, creating an environment that is warm and safe for them. They're at that stage of trying to figure out what they have control over in their classroom, and they're going to make mistakes while they're learning to do those things. And it's an environment where they need to know it's okay to make those mistakes.
Also, you said a warm and safe place, and I completely agree with that. There's so many times I get the question, is it okay to hug them? Yes, even in COVID times, they still need the hugs. Mm-hmm. They still need to know that they are loved, and they need that closeness. They need that physical contact.
Are you seeing different needs in the COVID context? So even Heather talking about routine, you know, but then things are kind of change all the time, or those sorts of things. So what are you seeing them need right now?
Honestly, I would say hugs. I think they're carrying more, and I think we as adults are too, they're carrying more stress than we realize. I mean, the news is on in the background at home. They're seeing mom and dad worry about jobs, worrying about money, and they don't have the vocabulary to articulate that to us, to tell us how that's making them feel or what they're experiencing at home. So they bring that in their emotions, and sometimes just accepting and knowing that as their caregivers at school, that you're there to protect them. You're there to hug them and hold them and just let them know it's okay. It might come out in a temper tantrum. It might come out in tears or being more reserved, but whatever it is, you're there to guide them through those experiences. And I think that's hard. They're developing the language at these ages to have conversations with you, but not necessarily to express those emotions and how they're processing all of that stuff.
Yeah, that's such a good reminder that even if they're not picking up the content of conversations, that they're picking up the emotional climate. And, you know, I think that as we think about the last 9, 12, 18 months is COVID, but is also social justice and racial reckoning in our country. It's the election, and that they do absorb that. That's a great point. So let's talk about the masks, because I have a lot of questions about this. And I've had questions since the beginning, especially at this age, because of the rapid language development and using social referencing for social and emotional cues. So tell me about masks with toddlers right now.
Yeah, that was my first, like one of my first thoughts was, wow, they're not going to be able to see our mouth formations to make, you know, those beginning babbling sounds. How are they going to figure this out? Miraculously, they are still figuring it out. I am still hearing, you know, my toddler's babbling and the ba-ba and the ga-ga and all those things are coming together still. I guess the other challenge I thought about too that I was worried about with masks is, oh my gosh, the child can't see my whole face. How are they going to know if I'm happy and excited, or how are they going to know if I'm serious? Because, you know, something they're doing is not okay, or they're going to get hurt. They can't see that emotion on my face. And I was really worried about that, how that was going to come across, but it's amazing how much your tone and your eyes can say a lot. And that really, I don't feel like has been a problem at all. I think again, making sure that that classroom is predictable and consistent is such a foundation.
I think even this time of year is a good time, a good reminder of that, because I think sometimes as adults, we think like, we'll have this fun surprise day and we'll do this thing, or we'll read this extra book, or we'll whatever, because to us, like, novelty is exciting. But what you were both saying, and I think it's so true, is like, no, now is the time to double down on being so predictable that they can like say the words you're going to say for the routine, because it frees up executive function and, you know, it frees up the brain space to be able to play and interact, because they're not worried about what's coming next if they have other things they're already worried about. And it sets them up to be successful. You're having fewer of those. But yeah, and I think that's a good reminder, because I do think that so many adults right now are looking for distractions from the stress of what's going on. And so we're tired of routine. For toddlers, that actually feels really good.
I think that's interesting, because in our room, I would say there's definitely the skeleton of the structure piece there. They know that after snack time, we go in and change diapers. But I would say in a sense, we've relaxed our schedule a little bit. And I think that's just because there are so many more demands that are placed on them at home. And there's the extra stress where we want the classroom to be a place where they can just come and be kids. They can just play. I mean, we're still teaching those social emotional skills, but it's more focused on the play pieces. When they're interested in doing an art activity, we do that, but it's not as like, okay, now it's art time. And now we're going to go do this. And we have to go outside at this time of day. Definitely still having those routine pieces for them so they know what's coming next, but also balancing that out with a little bit more flexibility to balance out the stresses that they're experiencing.
Yeah. And I think that's what I so enjoy about talking to you too, is that you understand the nuance of what works for one classroom or one set of kids is going to be different. And so not just the age differences, but the temperaments you have, right? And so sometimes you have a class that really does need that firm routine. And other times you have a class that's a little more go with the flow. And as long as you have kind of those anchors in your day, then you're okay.
And something for Taylor's classroom too, is their numbers are down still. Mm-hmm. We are at, in the infant room, we're still at our ratio of, you know, 1 to 4. And so we've got 8 children in the classroom. You guys are at 6 or 7 now, Taylor.
We're at 7 right now.
7, which typically that classroom has 12.
Yep.
Right. And I think that that allows for some, a little bit more of that flexibility.
Absolutely.
Taylor, what about masks for you guys? Any other thoughts about masks?
So we actually have, all of the kids that are in our classroom right now are wearing masks, and they are doing a phenomenal job with it. And like Heather, I was worried about how are they going to learn those things. I was nervous about our dual language learners, and they have one language at home and English is brand new to them, and how important it is to be able to hear when we enunciate things and what your mouth shape looks like when you're trying to figure out how to pronounce new words. And I am just amazed at how well they've all done. I found they're more receptive and stuff at the table when we don't have masks on. Those conversations flow more naturally. And it's almost like you can almost feel them breathe a sigh of relief of like, oh, we have a break from this. But they really do well. Parents ask about it. And I keep telling them they do better than we do. They need the occasional reminders, pull your mask back up over your nose. But, I mean, they're learning how to take them off to drink out of their water bottles. And then, I mean, it's another opportunity to teach self-help skills. So just taking a situation that's not ideal and just trying to capitalize on it and create new opportunities for them to grow and develop in those areas.
People who think that masks don't do anything. Now, I understand they're not sealed on your face, you know, but people who think masks don't do anything have clearly never been sneezed on by a toddler. Because if you've ever been sneezed on by a toddler, you're like, no, a mask would have been really helpful there, right? Like, yeah. I'm covered. How are the other COVID precautions impacting things?
Honestly, I don't know that we've changed a whole lot about what we do, especially with the cleaning stuff. We've always been so diligent on wiping shelves down and making sure toys are cleaned really thoroughly, especially in the infant room when they're mouthing stuff. So I don't feel like that has changed a whole lot for us.
One thing that's been hard is having all the soft stuff out. You know, I miss having pillows in the classroom. I miss having stuffed animals in the classroom. And then even soft, especially for infants, the soft dolls, you know, the room feels too sterile right now. So I am very much looking forward to when this ends, getting those soft things back in the classroom.
I guess to branch off of that, I mean, parents aren't allowed in the buildings. That's been really different. I think it's been harder to develop those relationships with parents because we're so limited in our communication. The kids are dropped off at the front door and we walk them out at the end of the day and give them a daily report, but there's not that morning conversation that happens. And so I think that piece is different. I feel like when challenging behaviors come up in the classroom, it's harder to feel like you have that solid foundation to have those conversations with parents because you don't talk to them as much as you typically do.
What is the hardest part of teaching or specifically of teaching toddlers right now?
I'm probably going to go back to the face masks and just those connections with them. I think there's kids that, again, with our dual language learners that are just more receptive to seeing your whole face. I've found myself when space allows to if I'm trying to have a conversation with a child that I feel like needs to see more of my face, I found myself backing myself up from that child and giving enough space to be able to take my face mask off so they can see the facial expressions and I can draw their attention to that so I can enunciate stuff clearer. And so that balance of the safety piece, but also the development piece.
Heather, what's hard about teaching right now?
I don't feel like, honestly, I don't feel like there's anything that's, it doesn't feel that different. I mean, what I've already talked about is, you know, the environmental pieces of that changing, but at the heart of it, we're still working with babies and toddlers, and that so much of that hasn't changed. I mean, they still need their, you know, their needs still have to be met. They still need new opportunities presented to them, and we can still do that. We can still meet their needs and we can still present those opportunities. So I don't feel like it's been that, it was kind of scary in the beginning, but now that we're in the routine of it, to me, it feels almost normal.
That's great. I mean, and I don't want to push you to be like, oh, let me come up with something negative. I've been talking to a lot of state pre-K and elementary teachers. And so they're doing the dance of like, we're in person, no, we're virtual, no, we're in person, no, we're virtual, no, I have kids in both, you know? And I think that's a totally different game. Whereas for you all, like, virtual is not going to be, I mean, if you go virtual, you're supporting families. You're not trying to get 2-year-olds to sit, you know?
Well, we did try that in the spring. Yeah, when we were closed, and we did close for 3 months, mm-hmm. I think it ended up being.
I mean, I know what some of our conversations, Heather, that we had with our cohort was, honestly, some of it was a therapy session for parents.
Definitely.
And it was just a chance to talk to another adult, because it was like, I'm spending all day with my kid and I'm working, but I need another human to talk to that knows my kid that I can talk to about this, or just knows me. Just to have those conversations. But I know we were very thankful that for us that happened at the end of the school year, because we had those relationships with the kids. We were able to do some of those large group type activities. We knew the songs that they liked. We knew the stories that they liked and that they would sit for. And so we could pull from some of that stuff. Whereas these teachers that are trying to build relationships with those kiddos at the beginning of the year that they don't even know yet, and you're trying to figure out and redirect and do guidance and all that stuff during a group time, I can't even imagine how challenging that is. And then you've got parents that are trying to do work and also make sure that their kid's actually on when they're supposed to. It's a balancing act.
So in a lot of ways, the pandemic has caused us to sort of re-examine how we do everything in education. And I know for you guys, part of the impact that we're not even talking about is that you usually work as part of the ed prep program with college students around, and they're not around. And I know there's other pieces we're not even talking about, but as we kind of rethink how we do things, is there anything good coming out of this that you see?
I think this whole experience has been just a really good reminder to be thankful for the quote unquote normal things that happened pre-COVID, the opportunities to build those relationships with families, simple things like Heather's mentioned with the environment of just the soft stuff that's comforting and warm and cozy for the little ones that we just take for granted having in a classroom every single day. And then when it's gone, then you realize how much some of that stuff really means to you.
I think something that we've learned is how important hand washing is. And I hope, I mean, I know we have been always very diligent. Sometimes I feel like over the top with hand washing, but it works. And it was funny to me when in the beginning of the pandemic, they were interviewing centers or different places and, oh, you know, we're doing hand washing like this and this. And many of us at the lab school, and not to brag, but kind of brag, is we're like, okay, that's how we already do it. And
right.
So I hope that after this all ends, that hand washing stays in place.
Taylor, I didn't ask a good question to get you to talk about what you were telling me before we got started about the kids being in and out.
I think it's been interesting to see how the kids have processed everything with COVID, specifically related to stuff in the classroom. We've had more conversations lately about, where are my friends at? We're sitting at the snack table, and that's probably one of the most obvious times that they notice it, because their chair is empty. And so they're sitting there and it's, where is so-and-so, or where is so-and-so? And so we're having those conversations about, well, they're their mom and dad or their grandma and grandpa, or whoever it is that cares for them, chose to keep them home. And so it's having an appropriate conversation with them that allows them to understand that their family feels that it's safest for them to stay home, but yet also not making it come across as, well, it's not safe for you to be here. And your mom and dad still love you and they still want you to come here, but every family has different standards and comfort levels for what they want to do with their children. It's been a very delicate conversation to reassure them that they're still here. They're still a part of our classroom and we still talk about them and we still have a relationship with them, but right now they're choosing, mom and dad are choosing to keep them home.
What I like about everything that you just said, Taylor, is how respectful all of that was. We all have to look at our own families and do what's right and what's best for our own families. And we need to learn to respect that. And I think that's something that I hope comes out of all of this too, is just learning more respect and more patience for everybody around us.
I am hopeful that is something, thinking about from a teacher prep lens, you know, that this is an opportunity that we're taking with our pre-service teachers to say, look, like, we've told you, you have to value the strengths in families, you know, take a strengths-based perspective with families. And this is the test. Like, can you be strengths-based when that family just doesn't show up to your Zoom, you know, or when they're choosing to stay home or when they're choosing to come or those sorts of things.
I was going to say, I think that respect piece that Heather touched on is really important when you think about what each child is bringing to school with them every day. Just the extra weight that they're carrying and this different situations that mom and dad are in. If they're short on money or if it's a job thing, being respectful of if you're giving advice on, hey, maybe try this strategy or routine at home, just taking into consideration that every family is in a different situation. And if you don't see that implemented, it's not for lack of effort. It's not because they say, oh, my child's teacher's crazy. Why would they tell me to do this? There's a lot else going on behind the scenes.
My sister and I have started telling my mom, lack of knowledge is not the inhibiting factor. Like, if I had the energy and the time and the, you know, emotional reserves, we would eat more vegetables and we would, you know, like all of these things that would be so great would be happening. And my, you know, my kids' financial futures would be settled and all those things. But like right now I'm just
today. Surviving.
Right. Anytime I can get us one notch better than surviving, I feel like we are making it. So we have teachers who have gone, you know, out of ed prep, they've graduated in the midst of this pandemic. This is not what they thought teaching was going to be. What would you share with new teachers that are starting out at this time?
I'm going to pass on a piece of advice that Heather actually gives me on a very regular basis, and that's take care of you. I think I didn't truly realize how much COVID is impacting us, just from the mental perspective. We closed back in March and it was this looming, like, how long are we going to be closed? And we have to find all these things to stay busy so that we can keep getting paid. And so we can keep educating ourselves and bettering ourselves while also meeting the needs of the kids that are at home with their parents. And then it was coming back to work and adjusting to very few kids in the classroom. And then the classrooms are steadily increasing and then we're rotating and switching and transitioning classrooms and all of that stuff is going on. And while a good chunk of that is normal and it happens at those certain times of the school year every year, there's also the uncertainty of, are we going to close again? And if we do, what's going to happen to us individually at home? What's going to happen to those kiddos at home? And trying to prepare for the uncertainty and always feeling like you need to prepare for the unknown, it makes you have something in the back of your head all the time. So your attention isn't devoted 100% to what you're doing at school.
Making it a priority and scheduling time. I'm a firm believer in that. Yeah. Another thing is you guys are talking, you know, reminding those new teachers out there, this isn't going to last forever. This is a very, you know, small piece in your teaching career. And while it is hard and it's harder now, it's not going to be this way forever. So hang in there. Like Taylor said, take the time that you need, you know, when you can to, you know, give yourself that mental break, but it does get easier. And man, first year teachers, it's hard anyway. it's no matter what, it's hard. It's a struggle, but you're going to look back on this time and think, wow, look at all the things that I've learned, and you'll be a stronger teacher in the long run anyway. So yeah, hang in there.
I love that Heather and Taylor keep emphasizing that at the heart of what they do, things haven't changed. It's still about meeting children where they are, giving them a safe place to learn and explore, and offering them new opportunities. Thank you to all the toddler teachers who are hanging in there with masks and gloves and smocks and extra cleaning and helping all of us out during this pandemic. Teachers, we love you. We are here for you. We hope that your new year is off to a great start. One programming note on our end, for the spring semester, we will be going down to a once a month podcast to accommodate some new roles that I'm taking on professionally. So you can look for us the first week of each month. We've got some fun stuff coming up about science and about social justice in young children, inclusion. And so I'm looking forward to getting those out to you, but we are going to make that downshift to once a month and then hopefully be able to throw up some bonus bites as we go. Thanks for listening and Happy New Year. Podcast recorded and edited by Christine Lippard. Music by Jason Lippard.